look like that. Took a corner, sideswiped a truck, crossed my fingers just for luck. My fenders was clicking the guardrail post, the guy beside me was white as a ghost. Smoke was coming from out of the back when I started to gain on that Cadillac. Knew it could catch him, I thought it could pass. Don't you know by then we'd be low on gas. We had flames coming from out of the side. Feel the tension, man, what a ride. I said, look out, boys, I got a license to fly. And that caddy pulled over and let us by. Now all of a sudden she started knocking him down in the dip. She started to rock and I looked in the mirror. Red light was blinking, the cops was after my hot rod Lincoln. They arrested me and they put me in jail and they called my pappy to throw my bail. And he said, son, you're gonna drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln.
And welcome back to Epic Radio here, broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And coming up next on the program is Resistance Radio featuring Stuart Acuff. And here he is.
Good morning, John.
Oh, my God. I got you on so loud. What happened there?
That's good morning, John.
Uh-oh.
Check.
Okay. Check. Now we're going down. Check.
Check.
It was me that was too...
Checkpoint checky, as Barney Fife said.
You're good, buddy. Go ahead.
Welcome to Resistance Radio on Epic Radio. Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, also known as the Rock of Appalachia. It's great to have you. What a great morning we're having here in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Broadcasting all across West Virginia, all across the Eastern Panhandle, all across the nation. And our listenership across the nation is growing and growing, John, and all across the world. Here on Resistance Radio, we're going to be talking every show about how we can resist, as John coined the name this morning, the dickhead. The one he used to call the creep, or the one some just call Trump. We make a point of not calling him president.
By the way, we have three listeners from Israel.
Three listeners from Israel.
And two from Turkey this morning.
That's great. Welcome. Shalom and salam. Notice how similar those two words are? And just like the people in the Middle East, very similar. It's great to be with you. And we got a caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hey, this sounds like Stephen Holt.
This sounds like David Eckstein.
Oh, hey, David. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm getting an echo, John.
Yeah, we're getting an echo. Can you call right back in? I think we got a little loop in there. And make sure if you're on speakerphone, can you please take the speakerphone off a little bit?
Yeah, okay. I turned it off.
Oh, okay, now it's better. Say hello again.
My name is Dave Eckstein.
Oh, that's perfect. Now you're in the sweet spot, buddy. Okay, good enough.
Hey, Dave. Yeah. How you doing, man?
Hey, Stuart, how are you, man?
I'm great. Listen, everybody, welcome David Eckstein to the show. David is a longtime friend of mine now for about almost 20 years, I think, David, right?
I'm sure it's at least that, yeah.
Yeah. David was the regional organizing coordinator and assistant director of the AFL-CIO organizing department when I was the organizing director. Before that, he was the field director of the Teamsters and a staunch ally of the progressive and the reformer Ron Carey. He was Ron Carey's right-hand guy, both when he was running for president of the Teamsters and then after he became president of the Teamsters. David, what you got on your mind this morning, man?
Well, I'm happy to hear you on the radio, first of all.
Thank you, brother.
And I'm glad that there's a lot of people out beating the streets over this issue with Trump and his executive orders and all the stuff that's going on in our country. And I'm alarmed, actually. Everything it seems like he's doing is against working class people.
Isn't it the truth, though? Isn't it the truth? What bothers you what bothers you the most, David?
Well, what bothers me the most is he's inflaming so many of these folks that are what I would call rednecks. I just don't understand why people would want to go backwards in history and start repeating ourselves. And we've come too far.
Yep, that's right.
And that's alarming to me. I see so much hatred on TV right now. And another thing that really irritates me is what Trump is doing right now with the media. You know, shutting people out.
Yeah.
Shutting news media, like CNN out. I mean, that sounds like Hitler stuff.
Doesn't it, though?
If you read the things that Hitler did before he came to power, this guy's almost falling in his shoes.
I think you're right, David, and it is it's worth being worried about, concerned about, and acting on it. That's really what we got to do. We have to take action, dramatic action, and continual action.
Well, right. we need leaders to lead, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's where we're, in the labor movement, we need leaders to lead.
That's right.
Not sit around. You know, they've done, our international leaders in the union movement have been in Trump's office both on the 13th of January. They were up in Trump Tower.
Yep.
And then a week or so later, they were in his office, in the Oval Office, I take it, in Washington, D.C., and
yep.
What did they get out of that? They come out bragging that they were great meetings. How can they be great meetings when he does 20 executive orders against working class people,
right?
And then he turns around and they're going to try to introduce a national right to work,
right?
I mean, that's
which will almost all but destroy the labor movement if it ever gets passed. And
oh my God, it'll destroy our public sector unions.
Yep. Absolutely. And he's talking about doing away with prevailing wage, which keeps the government from undermining and undercutting average wages in a community when they build a federal project. If we don't have prevailing wage on the new infrastructure project they're talking about, we will completely undercut the building trades unions, some of the same people who were meeting with him and talking about they had a great meeting.
Right. That's exactly right. And they met the other day and came out and said, what a great meeting they had. We'll see. Time will tell pretty quickly.
Sure will. I mean, for our listeners, let me just thank you, David, for being the first one that I know to question these meetings and question this behavior publicly. You did it on your Facebook page, and that's where I found out about these meetings from your own Facebook page. But you've been a reformer for a long time.
Stuart, listen, when I was at the Teamsters Union, I spent 14 years of my life fighting against corruption and
yes.
fighting against what we called the mob influence that was in our union.
Yep.
And I am not going to sit by and watch our national leaders throw away what our grandfathers and fathers fought for. I mean, the other day I put a thing on Facebook. I said, our fathers and grandfathers handed us a movement.
Right.
And we're going to hand back our children and grandchildren a cesspool.
Man. That is very thoughtful. That's very thoughtful. They handed us a movement, and we're handing our grandkids a cesspool. What a terrible, terrible shame. For our friends and neighbors listening around the world and across America, David Eckstein came up from the ranks. You worked on the docks at Kroger, if I remember right.
I did.
And that's how you got in the Teamsters originally, wasn't it?
That's exactly right. I started on the docks at the Kroger warehouses in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I had backed the former officers in my local, and I seen the same kind of corruption that I was that was going on. I questioned them about it at a union meeting, and their answer was, if you don't like it, run against it. So I did. And I put together a team. We went out, and we went to every shop in our local, which back then was probably 40, 50 different shops we had in our local in Cincinnati. And we did just that. We took them out of office. And then when Kerry came in office, Ron Kerry at the National, I went to work for him.
Yep.
Resigned my local, actually, and went to work for him because I didn't. I was against double dipping salaries too, by the way, uh-huh. which a lot of Teamsters were doing back then. So I resigned my local, and another person, a reformer, took over my local. I went to the National and fought for 14 years in that movement, where we trusted some, my goodness, probably 600 locals.
Good gracious. And you directed that work, right?
A lot of it I did, yes.
Yeah. But you and the general counsel.
I'm sorry?
You and the general counsel directed that work, right?
I directed some of it. Now, uh-huh. I can't say that I directed it, but I was a part of it. I worked real close with Ron Kerry. Mm-hmm. I was part of some of the trusteeships in our union. And I just think that we have to, where we're failing, Stuart, in our movement, the yeah. labor movement, is we have totally, I can't say totally, but we've left our members out. We're not engaging our members.
Too many
we're
times.
We're not teaching them how to fight. And
too many
our
times.
Our leadership are more thrilled about getting press ops and pictures with people like Trump than they are figuring out how do we get our members to be militant and get out in the streets and go for it. When we look at when you look back in the 30s and you see all those unions that were out in the streets in Minnesota and Chicago and different places and in the plants in the
San Francisco,
industry,
the general strike
and
the
members. They weren't leaders. They were members. Leaders got them out.
Right.
We
right.
don't have that.
Well, that in too many cases, we don't. We had a yours and mine's good friend, Rand Wilson, on last week. And Rand was talking about the same thing. And he was talking about how important Rand and myself and a few other people founded Labor for Bernie. And he was talking about
right.
how important Labor for Bernie was to Bernie's campaign. And nobody in Labor for Bernie was being paid to do that work. We just came together to mobilize rank and file workers for somebody who was really strongly working in the interest of all of us. And so Rand was making some of the same points you're making. And folks, friends and neighbors, we're going to make these same points every week on Resistance Radio because we can't beat Trump without average people. And before I forget, I want to make this point that organized labor should be the tip of the spear in the fight against Donald Trump. We should be leading right. it. And it was sad that we went to the women's.
Well, and I'll tell you something, Stuart. As long as people, there's a lot of us out there. There's a lot of
right.
people like you and Rand Wilson. And by the way, Rand Wilson is top notch, buddy.
Yeah, he is.
I worked real close with him on multiple campaigns at the Teamsters Union, including the UPS strike back in 96.
Yeah.
97. But
96.
Good 96. Man. And as long as we've got people out there and we get them out, people have to start speaking up.
Yep.
I mean, I know that people in our own movement are holding back because they're afraid, too, of retaliation, by the way.
That's right.
And we have to make it so people are comfortable saying enough's enough.
And what's on their mind?
Yeah.
Right? We've got to, people have to, and, you know, we have this, you know, social media has now given us the opportunity to communicate directly with one another. horizontally. So we don't have to go up the chain of command and then go down the chain of command. We can communicate across the chain of command. So we have this opportunity brought to us by innovation and technology, as my friend John Case says. But if people are afraid to use it, it does us no good. And we've got to return to the place where we can say what's on our mind, link arms, and fight back.
That's right. We're union, and we should never be afraid to stand up and speak our opinion, right or wrong. We should never be afraid to voice our opinion and be afraid of retaliation. That's what corporate America does. That's why people want unions.
That's right. David, we're going to have to get off the phone here in a bit. We've got another guest coming on, but I want to say two things. One is you're always welcome to be on this show, and you should call in anytime you want to. And then we're going to feature sometime in the near future an entire show with you talking about the reform movement and organized labor. Where are you calling in from today, David?
I'm actually calling from my home in Indiana.
And where in Indiana are you?
Yeah, I'm in Lawrenceburg, Indiana. It's right by Cincinnati, Ohio, actually. Southeast corner.
And right near Rabbit Run or Rabbit Hatch.
Rabbit Hatch. That's right, man.
Rabbit Hatch. David is a biker. And he spends his Sundays in a little town in Kentucky, I think, called Rabbit Hatch, right?
It is. It has a little general store there, and when you go there on Sundays, it's just loaded with Harleys and whatever kind of bikes are there.
Y'all don't let anything but Harleys in there, do you?
Well, we would prefer that. Because they're union-made and they're American-made. That's their main reason.
John, my friend John Case, who's engineering today and is my great friend and great brother. John's an organizer. He's spent 20 years organizing for the UE. Now, John, when David started working for me, when we hired David, and I have to tell this little story, I had to call the organizing director of the Teamsters, because when we hired David, President Hoffa was president of the Teamsters, and they hated David so much that I had to call the organizing director, who was a friend of mine from not the UPS strike, but the overnight strike. John Murphy was his name, from Boston. And I had to spend an hour on the phone convincing John Murphy that David Eckstein would be a good addition and good for the Teamsters in the organizing department of the AFL-CIO, and you certainly were. But David, now, he's retired like me and John, us old farts, so this is all, three old farts talking here. David is now doing some consulting work. So listen, if you run a local union, if you're thinking about running for office, if you've got an issue campaign you want to work on, David will put a campaign together for you, and there's no better person in the world to do that. I might be pretty good at it. I might even be as good as David at it. But if you hired the two of us, we could doggone sure put a good campaign.
We'd be a team, Stuart.
We have been a team in the past. We have brothers from a different mother. You're a great, great friend and a great trade unionist. I've never met a better trade unionist. But the story I was fixing to tell, and then we got to run. The story I was fixing to tell is when David came to work for me, he said, "Now come May, I got to grow my goatee out." And of course, being an old community organizer, I said, "Well, you don't want to do anything with your appearance that puts people off." He says, "Brother, come May, it's riding season." How many times you been to Sturgis, buddy?
Couple times, I've been all over the country on that bike. I do some long hauls on it.
I knew you were getting old when you had a tricycle built for you.
I have a nice trike. Yeah, it's sharp.
Hey, listen, buddy, we're gonna We're going to say goodbye to you for now, but call in anytime. Next week we'll be on at 11 o'clock on Wednesday next week. And
right.
we're going to have Fred Ross on next week at 11 o'clock on Wednesday. But call back anytime, and then I'm going to hook up with you here in a little bit and figure out a date we can build the whole show around you. Is that all right, Dave?
Well, I appreciate it, Stuart, and I'm glad you're on the radio, and it's good talking with y'all.
Say hi to our friends and neighbors across the country and across the world.
I will do that. I'll tell Ed and all those guys that you're on here. They'll like it.
Yeah. Hey, listen, you could really do me and John a big favor by kind of promoting within your world this radio show and this radio station. This is progressive radio 24 hours a day, labor-minded, pro-labor, pro-union, pro-worker, pro-human rights, every day, all day long.
I would never have known about it had you not contacted me on Facebook or Messenger, and I will definitely get the word around.
Okay, we'll be podcasting it later today as well. So
that's right.
I'll send you a link to it.
And David, tell Pam I said hi, and as soon as she's ready to leave you, I'll be right there.
I'll tell her that.
All right, brother. Thanks a million. You have a great weekend. Go Dirty Birds.
Bye.
That's my good friend David Eckstein. And here in a little bit, we've got Stephen Holt calling in from Boston, Massachusetts. I'm telling you, we're all over America here on the Rock of Appalachia. My good friend, good brother, brother from another mother, John Case, is engineering us today. John is the manager, director, and president of this radio station. Computer whiz, organizer, great organizer, and he's organized this whole thing, and all of us who are working on it, working for free, you know, when you can get people to work for you for nothing, you know you're a good organizer. And so John's a great organizer, and I just really appreciate him engineering this show, because I'm too damn dumb to work three computers. I can't hardly work my iPhone, much less three computers.
Well, you just have to go to our special remedial class.
I tried that one time, John. Didn't work.
No, you got to do it several times. You got to keep doing it until you get there.
Well, I'm going to do the best I can.
It's like when you're standing and you're getting ready to race in a swimming race.
Yep.
And, you know, you're waiting for the sound of the gun.
Right.
But sometimes the gun will scare you.
Right.
But instead, you have to say, the gun sets me free.
Right. At least puts me in the water.
That's right. Set you free.
Right. And that's what Resistance Radio is all about, setting us all free.
They say in swimming, you know, that sometimes the winning or losing, it depends on how fast you are off the mark.
That's right. Well, on that 100-meter, it is how fast you are off the mark.
A lot of great.
Ain't nothing but a hair's breadth between the first and second.
I mean, two equally powerful, you know, swimmers, the guy that gets off first is going to win.
That's right.
So there you go.
Isn't it the truth? We got a real treat coming up for you, friends and neighbors. Stephen Holt, also known a.k.a. Stephen Windwalker. I'm going to wait till he's with us to really introduce him, but I want you to know he's a great leader, a great thinker, a really fascinating person, and my first mentor in organizing. He taught me some of the lessons Steve taught me. I used all the way through my career. It was 40 years ago this year that I went to work for Stephen Holt in Dallas, Texas. 40 years ago in July that I went to work for Stephen Holt in Dallas, Texas. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about the story of our relationship when he gets on, because I want to make sure he's able to hear it.
Play a tune till then, or you want to keep on rapping?
Yeah, let's play a tune.
I got a good one for you.
All right, what you got?
Wake Up Everybody. Harold Melvin,
everybody! Oh yes, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes.
Okay, I think that'll do us until Steve calls in here.
Well,
Whoa. Here we go. We'll try again now.
Hey.
Okay, we're going to try again here, Steve. You still there?
How's that?
You're coming on kind of loud. Let me just hold on. Try again. Say so. Go check for me.
Check.
That's good. You're on a speakerphone.
I'm on Skype through my computer. I guess.
Okay. Then that's good. No, you're good. That'll be fine. You're coming on. That's why you're coming on strong, because Microsoft makes its own voices much stronger than other people's voices. Okay. it's like originally years ago they took all the vowels out of the English language, and when I was working for Netscape, the head of the CEO Jim Barksdale sent out a letter one time with all the vowels missing. To all the employees, and we asked him at the next company meeting, what happened to that email you sent out? Oh, well, Microsoft owns all the vowels now, you know. So anyway, welcome to Resistance Radio. Okay,
Stephen Holt.
Good morning, my brother
from a different mother. How you feeling this morning, brother?
I'm feeling good speaking with you.
You
need to do this more often, yeah.
That's exactly right. Isn't that the truth? As I was saying, leading up to your appearance on the show, Stephen was my first mentor in organizing. I went to work for him 40 years ago this year in July of 1977. I met Steve in Little Rock, Arkansas. I just finished my training drive for ACORN. And they wanted to send me to Dallas, Texas. And I said, well, I can't go yet because I'm teaching a Sunday school class at my dad's church. And
Here we go.
I wanted Steve to release me from my year-long commitment to organizing. And Steve put his glasses on the top of his head, as he did. That's the first way you knew you were getting organized by Steve. He put his glasses on top of his head. He rubbed his eyes and said, well, I can't release you from the commitment. That's between you and the Lord. You remember that day, Steve?
It does stand out. We've been telling the story on each other for some time.
That's right. Stephen is a community organizer of more than 10 years. He is one of the people, we called him the Harvard Five or the Harvard Six, who came to ACORN in 1975 and changed it from a statewide organization in Arkansas to a national organization. And Steve ran Texas for ACORN for several years, and then he went to New Hampshire, and I followed him there. Steve was elected to the Boston school board. He was a member of the last elected school board in Boston back in the 80s, which was a kind of a tough place to be. Steve, like me, has some lineage in amongst American Indians. Both of us have people from the Cherokee Nation, and I also have people from the Chickasaw Nation. And I presided at Steve's second wedding. Do you remember that?
You certainly did.
We had a traditional Cherokee wedding.
We did. Yeah, we did have a ceremony there. A smudge ceremony.
Yes, that's right. In Harvard Yard, I think.
It was not far from Harvard Yard.
Right. It's a little community church. And Stephen is a scholar, a writer, a publisher, an editor. He actually published my second book electronically, which I'm still grateful for, and up the sales of that book pretty dramatically. I'm now that I'm retired, I'm working on a collection of poetry. I've been asked by the publishers of the little journal I publish most often in to do a collection with them. And Steve is an entrepreneur. He's the CEO of two different publications, two different firms. And all around good guy, and probably, unfortunately for me, one of the biggest fans of the New England Patriots around. I think the Dirty Birds are going to get y'all this year, Steve.
Well, they may, and if they do, it'll just be it'll be a little bit of back at you for the right. The political stances of the leadership of our New England football team. Right. They're all on the wrong side of the track.
Right, right. So it's really good to have you on here, Steve. This is the second broadcast of my radio show called Resistance Radio here on Epic Radio, broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And I wanted, Steve, to talk about the moment that we're in politically in this country and the dangers of that moment. Steve, we just had on the air earlier here on Epic Radio another show. We had on Dr. Ray Smock, who runs the Bird Center here at Shepherd University in Shepherdstown, but he used to be the House historian, the House United States House of Representatives House historian. He had the distinction of being fired by Newt Gingrich in 1995. And he was, my friend John Case asked Dr. Smock the nature of the crisis we're in, and Dr. Smock said, well, he thought the Muslim ban, the infamous Muslim ban, all our listeners know what I'm talking about, the infamous Muslim ban has created a constitutional crisis because it imposes a religious test on not just immigrants, but green card holders, and in some cases, citizens who are at home or who were at home visiting family and friends. And it also imposes a test of native origin. I wonder how you would describe this moment that we're in, Stephen. So I'll refer to you sometimes as Stephen, Steve, Captain. I've been calling you Captain for 40 years. I'm not going to stop now.
Whatever gets us through.
And I'll also refer to you occasionally as Windwalker. So anyway, talk about the moment that we're suffering through right now.
You know, whenever anyone starts talking about a constitutional crisis, it sounds a little academic and a little bit like you'd hear from pundits, and maybe there's a natural thing for many of us to say, oh, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Because in the past, when we've had, you know, if the recognizable constitutional crises of the last 50 years or so, they're about petty personal things like Richard Nixon's burglars and Bill Clinton's zipper.
Right.
But that isn't what we have today. Today, the bedrock foundation of America itself is facing a concentrated, serious attack from within for the first time in any of our lifetimes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We're talking about the Constitution, our core beliefs, and our inequality, FDR's four freedoms, the freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, freedom from fear. They're all under attack. Homeland security, our national safety, and the global alliances that have kept us safe for generations now are under attack. The safety and the existential the existence of women, people of color, immigrants, Muslims, Jews, LGBTQ, and more.
Right.
They've been scapegoated. They've been their due process rights have been eroded, and their existence is under attack. And then there's been a kind of a fundamental assault on decency, which just stinks. And you know, any of us who are fathers, or
right,
of course, any of us who are mothers, just recoil from the behavior of what was the name you called him?
Dickhead.
Trump.
Dickhead.
So, you know, we've had presidents in the past who were personally disliked by a lot of people. LBJ, Nixon come to mind.
Yep.
But that's not what's going on here. When our core values come under attack, we face extreme, extraordinary tests as a nation and as citizens. So, you know, will we stand up for the things we've always believed in? Will we pay attention, even on Super Bowl weekend, you know? Right now, we're only 2 weeks into the Trump presidency, but I'd have to say so far, pretty good. So far, a large portion of the American people have shown ourselves to be very focused. We've represented, pushed back hard on our own, via our own First Amendment rights and our increasing willingness to be effective citizen lobbyists. Most of all, we've shown that when our Constitution and our freedoms and our core beliefs and our very existence come under attack, our ability to connect with each other undergoes a fundamental kind of change.
Talk about that.
Ability to connect is at the heart of what a movement is.
Are we in?
You and I have talked in the past about movement and organization, and I think we're in a moment here where we're seeing the potential for movement in ways we haven't before.
Talk about that, and talk about. See, I'm a firm believer that I'd like for you to talk about, if you would, some of the characteristics of movement. I'm a firm believer that two of the most important characteristics of movement, we're talking about non-engineered activity. So characteristics are spontaneity, in my view, which has been demonstrated both with the Women's March and the demonstrations at the airports. I mean, you talk about spontaneous action demonstrated in Berkeley to disrupt Milo Yiannopoulos's speech at Berkeley. And the other characteristic that I like to talk about is creativity. Would you talk about your ideas about characteristics of movement?
Now let's go back to the experience we've all had, and it's important work that we've all done, the work that goes on in an organization where it's like pulling teeth, and it goes on also in your garden variety election campaign.
Yes,
we rely on telephone trees and mailings and fundraisers, and they're all very specific, and you know, you make 100 calls and you hope to get 15-20 people out to the meeting,
right?
But in a movement, the fierce urgency of the need to connect absolutely takes over, so that it animates and fires up connection and community everywhere, from book groups to parent groups to church congregations to senior centers, to high schools, colleges, workplaces, the coffee shops where we stand in line wishing we didn't have to go to work. And all of this gets multiplied by social media in exactly the same ways that's happened all around the world in the past decade. In every case I've just mentioned, there have been thousands of people who've been mobilized to take action in the past 2 weeks from those pre-existing forms of gathering, just as well as over a century ago, farmers and workers rose up to demand economic justice out of conversations that they would have at the local Grange or their church,
right,
or their feed and grain stores and depots.
Right.
So the organizational fabric of our revolution.com and Indivisible and Swing Left and Move On and radio programs like this one, Stuart, among many, many others, it continues to be essential. But for all of us, we need to continue to make ourselves available to the political prairie fire of movement. It isn't hard.
Wow.
All we got to do is stay tuned in, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or your platform of choice or the news or your organizations.
Right.
You have to stay tuned into each other.
Wow. The make ourselves available to the political prairie fire of movement.
It ain't gonna burn us. It's just gonna make everything more intense.
No, that's exactly right. I was gonna ask you to move from this discussion of movement to organization. When you said that, political prairie fires of movement, I recall a book that you had me read once called Prairie Fire Ablazin', about the North Dakota Nonpartisan League, which was one of the most powerful and most successful state populist organizations back in, I think, 1910, 1915, something like that.
That's right. Some things don't change. I'm still trying to get people to read good books.
It's a great book. You also had me read Tom Hall's, I think it was Tom Hall, biography of Huey Long, which was fascinating as it could be. Was it Tom Hall?
Was that Harry T. Williams.
Harry T. Williams. That's right. Tom Hall was a country singer.
That's a great book.
And, yeah.
And that, you know, say what you want about Huey. He certainly knew what a movement was.
He knew what a movement was, and he was about working people and poor people. Now, right now we're seeing the term populist thrown around a lot, and just again to my relationship with Stephen Windwalker and our relationship with one another, Stephen was the person who introduced me to Jim Hightower back in Dallas, Texas, and I actually, first time I spoke to 10,000 people from the steps of the state capitol was at a American Agricultural Movement rally that Jim Hightower organized when he was running for ag commissioner. He, at the time, he was editor of the Texas Observer. I know it's driving Jim Hightower crazy, and it's driving me crazy, the misuse of the term populist. Would you talk about what populism really is and why this is such an abomination, the way this right-wing activity or fascist activity is being referred to as populist?
You know, I think that a lot of people, when people start to feel forgotten, when they start to feel like they're desperate to be remembered,
right,
and that they'll buy into some kind of phony versions of populism. And that's absolutely what has happened with the Trump campaign. You know, every now and then I'll post something or have a conversation where I say, you know, we got to stop talking past people and we got to start connecting with people around, you know, fundamental values, values of fairness, values of where we say we're all in this together.
And yep.
An injury to one is an injury to all.
Right.
And, you know, those kinds of ideas, and those kinds of core values can be appropriated by false forms of populism, which is why, I've come around to so enjoying and appreciating Bernie's ability to define what progressivism is in a way that overlaps with populism, but is maybe a more valuable concept for our country.
Yep.
I'm constantly, as much as we believe in our movement, I think it's really important for us to believe in the good people who haven't quite joined us yet.
Oh, talk about that, man. Yeah.
Yeah, many of those people are coming. They'll get here. They'll be with us in the future. But let's don't forget, there were millions of essentially good people who voted for Obama.
Right.
Even some who voted for Bernie, and then they turned around and they voted for Trump.
Right.
They're not bigots. They're not misogynists. They're not pussy grabbers. They're sure as hell not billionaires.
Right.
They had a blind spot or two, but the worst thing you can say about most of them was they just got snookered.
Yep.
They're forgotten. They're desperate to be remembered. So they bought the lies and the cynical promises of Trump. And if that disqualifies them from ever being part of the solution again, we're in deeper trouble than I want to own.
Yep.
So how do we bring them back? Not by watering down what we stand for. Instead, we got to be honest and double down on what we stand for. And
yeah.
At the same time, never, ever talk past each other. Stuart, both you and I grew up in small, pretty conservative towns.
Right.
I still know and love lots of the people I grew up with.
Right.
See some of them every year. Mm-hmm. Some of them have been right with me, supporting Bernie, standing up against Trump over the past year.
Right.
But there are other good people who voted for Trump and still are hoping he can save them.
Yep.
Every time I have a political conversation or something to post or share, I think about how I should communicate with the people I grew up with. How can I help them to find a way back to the things we all learned about together in history class and government class?
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are going to come back, some won't. But along the way, we need to do everything we can to make them feel welcome.
Right.
It's, you know, because the vanguard is so important, but the base is
you got to have the base. You got to have the base.
You can't get there without going through the base.
Right. You know, that's right. You can't change anything without a strong base.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, that's one of the differences, one of the reasons real populism is so important, because you got to have a large, strong base of people acting collectively in both their individual and their collective interests, right?
That's right.
There's so many pearls of wisdom that you're sharing with us today, to borrow or steal a slogan. There's so many great thoughts you're sharing with us today. I want to ask you, if you can, to put some of these down so we can run it on our blog called Resistance Radio. You can help us build the readership of that blog. You're already helping us build the listenership of this show and this radio station. Now,
well, you're very kind, Stuart, and of course I'll do that.
Thank you.
I don't know, it might lose as many people as the game, but we'll give it a shot. But the other thing that I was thinking about last night, because I've been somebody who wrote my thoughts out since I was a young kid, and I was thinking that I was writing some of these things down.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that you're going to have guests on. You had already with David this morning, and mm-hmm. and people you had on last week, and Hal, Fred Ross coming on next week. That's a special moment. And I'm hoping that you will, that, you know, every time somebody gets signed through to, you know, when they call in, maybe it's through John or you or whomever,
mm-hmm. yep.
that they should get asked, is it okay if we transcribe what you said and put it in the blog? Because I think you're going to find you got a lot of good things to share in different platforms, you know, printed page, printed screen,
thank you. Thank you, Stephen, very much. We would greatly appreciate your thoughts, and we will do that. We will ask people if we can transcribe what they say and put it on the blog. Certainly, we've got a podcast. We're going to podcast this interview, this show. John is podcasting everything that comes out. And just last night, John made sure that we're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. By the way, we're playing rock and roll music at nighttime. Not just rock and roll.
No, we have a country night. We have a jazz night. We have a we might even have a night of hymns. I don't know. Not yet. But live.
I'll tell you what, John.
Yeah.
I've been paying attention to some of what you've been playing. And I think you may be fixing to put Spotify out of business on my
Oh yeah, man. Just take a look at our calendar, man. We're going to be, we're cooking with gas here. We got a bunch of old hippies around here that have 40 years worth of albums. We're going to,
I think we should do a gospel night, and I think we should, should begin with Johnny Cash's last album, Hymns My Mother Sang. His last album.
Was that his last album, or was it Hurt?
No, it was. I think it was hymns my mother sang, including Rock of Ages, Cleft for Me.
John, you know you can do better when you get Johnny on himself.
Yeah.
Well, we heard a little bit of Johnny this morning.
Well, we're going to call we can call up the dead on the show.
Right.
We're very spiritual here, and we'll have Johnny weigh in on a number of things like values. What happened to values? Okay.
Right. John's he is a Quaker, and I attend his meeting on Sunday mornings.
It's called Poets and Mechanics.
Poets.
If you want to drive down here and attend meeting, you know, it's a comfortable place.
In the neighborhood.
Okay, yeah. Shepherdstown West, right on top of the Four Seasons bookstore, about 20 feet from where we are now broadcasting. We have a little meeting on Sunday.
Right. God's country here in West Virginia, the Rock of Appalachia.
And why did God sell it to the coal industry?
Why did he?
If it's God's country. Why did he do that?
John used to be the chair of the Ministerial Association here in Shepherdstown. I said, well, how in the world?
Well, I'm still a member.
How in the world would they make an atheist the chair of the
Well, I'm a special kind of atheist that believes that divinity is in our future. There not our
go.
Past.
There you go.
After the revolution.
Well, or perhaps the revolution plus a little more time to season ourselves.
Season ourselves. Of course, some of us are pretty damn seasoned now.
We're talking about seasoning with the salt of heaven.
There you go.
Not the evils of the past.
The salt of the bottle.
Yeah, no, but that too, yes.
But... Now, Steve, you have the distinction, amazing distinction of being the only person I know of who ever had an entire 10-page memorandum, which began on the front page of a national newspaper.
The Manchester Union leader. Manchester Union leader.
The Manchester Union leader in Manchester, New Hampshire.
We have something. This is a little bit of plagiarism from Huey, actually, because we had a Share Our Wealth campaign up
right.
in New Hampshire, and
right.
it seemed like it made the most sense in the world to our members from Berlin to Claremont to Woodsville to Concord and Nashua and Manchester and Portsmouth and
Lebanon.
And we were fixing to take down New England Telephone and get them to share $16 million a year with the people in New Hampshire.
Right.
It all made such good sense, but apparently I made one too many copies.
That was an incredible time. I still have
had a nice twofer in terms of media coverage. You know, they spelled my name right. But the twofer was that not only did they run the memo starting right in the middle of the front page,
right?
But on the editorial page, same day, I believe.
Same page. The editorial page.
Editorial on the front page.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I grant you that. And, I believe the comparison was I've been compared to a lot of really bad people, but this is the nicest comparison I've ever had in my life. I was compared to Che Guevara.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that.
You know, this is not going to help me build a base.
Not only were you compared to Che Guevara, they titled or headlined their editorial "Try a Little Tenderness," which for those of us who are music buffs, particularly West Tennessee, which I am, music buffs, was the title of Otis Redding's greatest song, "Try a Little Tenderness."
That's right. Now, who was his? Who was playing? Guitar on that?
Steve Cropper. Steve Cropper played guitar. Booker T played the organ. and Donald Duck Dunn played the bass. Steve Cropper, by the way, also all at Stax Music, also mixed and produced posthumously Otis Redding's greatest hit, which was Dock of the Bay.
That was a jam. The Steve Cropper did some wonderful things, and over a long period of time, didn't
he? Yeah, he did. Well, he and Isaac Hayes probably had more to do with the sound at Stax than anybody else. Isaac Hayes and David Porter wrote all those great songs. And that was long before Isaac Hayes found his voice and found his way into the recording studio. That's a part of my own history. My sister was born in the same town Isaac Hayes was, in Covington, Tennessee. Steve, we're going to let you go. We got some more business to do. But
so good to talk to you, Stuart.
It's so good to talk to you, my brother. So good to talk to you. We'll have you on again.
I see you on emails a lot. I just had a good time to talk to you. Thanks, man.
There you go.
And say
you
hi
to, have a great day.
To Betty, and say hi to Betty and Mariah and Kippy and Danny and
give
take care of yourself. I will, brother. I will. Thank you so much.
I love you, man.
God bless you. I love you too, brother. Bye-bye.
Take care.
So, you know, one of the great things about this show is we're gonna get beyond having just organizers on here, but this is gonna be the show in America that has the most about the nuts and bolts of organizing, the nuts and bolts of movement building, and real organizers talking about what makes change and how to make change. And saying that, we've got a really special show next week. Wednesday at 11 o'clock next week, we're going to have a guy named Fred Ross, who is the son of the organizer who discovered Cesar Chavez. Fred Ross discovered Cesar Chavez during an organizing campaign in Los Angeles, the organizing campaign that began the change to take California from a right-wing state to probably the most progressive state in the union by mobilizing and organizing Latino voters, mainly Mexican-American, sometimes known as Chicano, Latino people in California, starting in Los Angeles, with Fred Ross and Cesar Chavez. And Fred Ross's son, Fred Ross Jr., Fred Ross Sr. is passed on. But his son, the closest there is to Fred Ross Sr., is going to be on with us next Wednesday at 11 o'clock. It's going to be a real treat. And he's going to be promoting a relatively new biography of his father called America's Social Arsonist. You might want to pick it up this week and read it, so that you're tuned in and the show next week will even be more special to you. And we're going to be broadcasting from now on, not on Friday, but on Wednesday. That gives me time to go see my kids down in outside Washington, D.C., and travel a little bit now that I'm retired. Listen, friends and neighbors, it's been really good to have you on Resistance Radio, on Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, also known as the Rock of Appalachia. John, you got something to carry us out on? Maybe back to Harold Melvin?
Well, we can do a little Harold Melvin. Yes, I believe that could be arranged rather quickly here.
Wake up, everybody.
And
I'm trying to think who the lead singer. Teddy Pendergrass was the lead singer of Harold Melvin
and the Blue Notes. Yeah, okay, well, that's
Teddy Pendergrass.
I'm glad to hear that. I just recently
Wake played. Up, everybody, no more sleeping.
If I can, there we go. Let's see. Let's
get there. Beautiful song. Great song.
Well, the problem is that it's we got to call it up here from the pit,
from the vault, from the vault. The musty, dusty, rusty, oldie, goldie here on the Rock of Appalachia. Wake up, everybody!
Come on.
No more sleeping. My friend Reverend James Orange loved this song. It was his favorite song. Every time he made a speech, he would quote this song. Enjoy, brothers and sisters. I'll see you next Wednesday, 11 a.m. on Radio Resistance Radio. Thank you. God bless you. Have a great week, and go Dirty Birds Sunday afternoon. Bye-bye.